Hello and welcome to the Bunny Cast. That's right, you remember the Bunny Cast, that podcast. It's been a while, it's been a minute. This is how long it's been. The phrase, it's been a minute, is now in common use. Whereas the last time we did an episode of this, it wasn't. This is Queen McDonald, by the way. Hello. If you've not used it's been a minute in conversation, you really want to start getting it in. All the cool kids are saying it, you're missing out. I could start with the usual apology about there's been a big gap, but let's be honest, we all know the Bunny Cast is very much the sort of pops up and surprises you. Nothing like syphilis. Yeah, it's like the syphilis of podcasts. Does that work? I've never had syphilis. I said that like it was a thing I regret. I don't. I've not heard good things. Anyway, I've not scripted this. I don't know if that's become apparent or not yet. Very nice to be here. I say here. Here is my house. I mean, I've been here quite a lot, to be honest. There's been not a lot of reason to leave in the last couple of years. Fun side note before we get started on this. I have still not seen a copy of my book, The Stranger Times, in a bookshop. Because bizarrely, it's doing well. Let's be very clear. It's doing very well. Got great reviews in the national press. If you don't know about this, C.K. McDonald is my alter ego. I've written a paranormal comedy. You know, it's called comedy. A book like my books, but in a paranormal thing, set in the newspaper in Manchester. And yeah, it got very nice reviews. The Times, the Financial Times, the Irish Times, other newspapers. They didn't have the word Times in the title, but all the best ones do. So let's just stick with them. And The Guardian, obviously. And also, where else? The Express? I can't remember. No, it wasn't The Express. SFX as well. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, but yeah, because it came out in the middle of the pandemic, it was in... theoretically in bookshops, but bookshops weren't open. So, you know, it was very much the Schrodinger's cat of books. So bizarrely, and hardbacks sort of come out and they don't get in initially, they don't sort of keep them forever. They sort of, the paperbacks are the big volume thing. So the hardback was like when bookshops opened up properly in like, I can't remember exactly when, but I went in, you know, the last couple of months. And because of the shops were closed when my book came out, they weren't in it. And I had to do this sort of sales pitch where I went into Waterstones, the biggest bookshop in the north of England, on Deansgate in Manchester. And genuinely, the first time I saw my book in a bookshop in anywhere in the UK was when I brought a copy of it in to give to a manager there to give him the sales pitch. By the way, guy was lovely. I mean, they were very excited to hear about it, genuinely. So that's turned around. It was a very good thing. It was a lovely guy. Ollie was his name. If you're ever in there, give him a shout. He's a nice dude. But yeah. So I was very excited, but that was a weird... it's a weird thing about the world we're living in now. The next book, by the way, is coming out next year, February. I'm just proofing it now, which is that terrifying thing when you're just going through looking for typos and spelling mistakes. I say that me, Elaine, several highly paid professionals are all doing it. It's still the most horrible part of any process because it's just looking for screw-ups. And at 110,000 words, there's a lot of chances there could be a screw-up in there. Anyway, none of this is relevant. Again, this is why I script these things. But yeah, things have been going good otherwise. I hope you're well. We've just had the Bunniversary, which is what inspired me to do this, really. If you don't know what the Bunniversary is, I mean, again, it's a phrase everybody's using, kids. You really want to get on that. It's the August 30th, also my 46th birthday. But it was also the 5-year anniversary of my first book, A Man at One of Those Faces, coming out. That's right, Bunny has been out there in the world now for 5 years. And, you know... I mean, God, I told you, if you're on my newsletter, which I presume you are, if not, whitehairedirishman.com, sign yourself up, sort yourself out. I did tell the story about the first book I sold, which was before a Sarah Millican gig in the Symphony Hall, I think it was, in Birmingham. It was my first ever book sale where some bloke, I hadn't even been on stage yet, he just came up and asked for it, looked at the book and bought it. It was amazing. Can still remember it really well, because it's a terrifying thing when you come out with a book first off. It's honestly, God, and I said this, and sincerely, I know I'm usually just taking the piss here, but I will try and be sincere. It's an amazing thing. It's a hard thing to get your head around. There's now well over 500,000, we don't know the exact figure, we haven't figured it out, but well over 500,000 of those books have sold now, which is incredible. Like, and it's an amazing thing. People in Australia and America and Ireland and Britain and all around the world, Japan, people in South America, there's a little cluster of fans in... somewhere in South America. I can't remember what country it is now, but it's great. This guy liked it. He gave it to his mates, and there's this weird little book club somewhere in the middle of Central America. It was just South America. Just an extraordinary thing. And it is an amazing thing about, for all the crappy things the internet is, the fact that your book can go around the world is pretty awesome. Genuinely, it's pretty cool. And we are very thankful. The reason it has done is, honestly, it's just been word of mouth. So if you have been spreading the word, sincerely, thank you very much. People have been very kind like that. It's amazing. We get a lot of emails and people telling me that their father and their brothers and sisters and mothers and friends gave them the copy of the book and now they're fans of the book and stuff. So it's lovely. Again, it's been a long time since the last one of these. I can't remember how long ago it was. Certainly what's happened since then is there's a new, the fifth episode of the increasingly, what we're now going to call the increasingly inaccurately titled Dublin Trilogy. Dead Man's Sins has come out in ebook and paperback and hardback as well, actually, bizarrely. And it's got lovely reviews. It's not out in audio yet. Morgan is working on it. But unfortunately, the problem is if you have somebody really talented like Morgan C. Jones narrating your audiobooks, turns out he's also good at general acting. And he's got a play in a film he's doing at the minute. So he is hoping to get cracking on it in a couple of weeks as I record this at the start of September 2021. Genuinely had to check what year it was there. He is going to get cracking on it. So I'd say it's probably going to be November, the way these things go. But hopefully he has read it and he's very keen to get going. It's just scheduling. But he has done Welcome to Nowhere, which is the standalone book that I wrote in 2020 at the start of all the craziness. I'll be honest, Welcome to Nowhere is genuinely a book I have a lot of affection for. It is of those books, I mean, leaving aside The Strange of Time and stuff, but certainly of the Bunnyverse books, I don't think anyone would disagree. It's the most out there one. Because basically, it's a weird how it came about. I wrote we probably call it a novella, short story novella, called Smithy's Revenge that you may have read back in the dark days. It's no longer available anywhere because you took it down when the book came out. But basically, I had this idea for a short story using Smithy and Diller, who appear in the McGarry Stateside books. And I've always really loved those two characters. I actually named my dogs after just one of them, Jackson Diller. My dogs are Jackson and Diller. So yeah, I've always loved those characters. I did this short story sort of novella thing, I think when Disaster Inc. came out, maybe? Just using the two of them. I really enjoyed it. And it was one of those things where at the end of it, I really wanted to know what happened next, because it didn't feel like it was the end of something. It felt like it was the start of something. And I always said I'd like to go back to it. And then weirdly, I think when the pandemic thing kind of hit and we're all locked down, because my life normally is sitting in my office writing, it felt very restricted. That was basically all I had left. And don't get me wrong, I was very lucky. A lot of people obviously had way more inconvenience than that in their lives, God knows. But yeah, I just kind of gave myself license to do something fun. And that was the idea I came up with, was I always wanted to make that into a book. And I did. And I decided when I was doing it to just let my imagination run wild. And it does go to some weird places, like Nowhere, not to give too much away, but Nowhere of the title is a sort of, I don't know what you'd call it. It's like a Mad Max enclave in the middle of the desert that they end up in. It gets pretty bizarre, but I honestly love it. I think there's a lot of action sequences and stuff near the end that I'm really very fond of. Because I'll be honest with you, when it comes to car chases and fights in books and actually in films now, all that kind of action stuff, I don't know about anybody else. Maybe I'm just becoming jaded, but I find it a lot of the time, it can be quite boring. That's why any kind of film or book that tries to do different things with that sort of stuff, I really like. For example, a film that wasn't very well received, Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn spin-off film in the DC universe, if you're into your cartoon films, or comic book films rather, by no means a perfect film. But I really liked it. And a large part of it I did was, because obviously the kind of thing it is, it had quite a lot of fight scenes and stuff, genuinely thought it had some of the most interesting, fun things to do with the fight scenes, to do something different rather than just having people kicking and punching each other in the same tedious way and having them doing the parkour chase scenes and stuff. This, it was very different, and I think much better for that. And I like any film that does that kind of stuff. And in this book, I think there's some genuinely kind of scenes, more with a kind of with cars, with vehicles, without giving too much away, that I'm really quite proud of, especially because there's a sort of escape sequence and stuff that I was really quite pleased with. I'm Irish. When I say really quite pleased, that's as excited as I get, by the way. We're not a nation prone to self-congratulation. But genuinely, I think there's a lot of fun stuff in that. Also, the idea of the museum that's in it, I think, is genuinely a lot of fun. And it was one of those things where I was just coming up with fun ideas and throwing them in and having a good time. So it is the book where I will say, I think a lot of people say it's their favorite. A lot of people also couldn't get into it. If you're like more into the kind of, if you're a crime fan who didn't mind the fact that the books were funny, it might not be the one for you. But if you fancy just sort of strapping in and going for a mad ride, then Welcome to Nowhere is very much a book I think you'll enjoy. I got a real kick out of it. I'm actually going to read it again in a couple of weeks' time. But I remember really enjoying it. And it was an interesting process taking something old and repurposing it and making it into something new. So yes, it is, because we've had somebody complain on Audible that it's, the first hour is a, well, I think actually, about technically 30 minutes in, there's a prologue, which you're about to hear. Nice little link there. Then there is, it goes to the kind of what was in the short story, and then it continues on from there. Yeah, so there's about an hour that you would technically have read somewhere for free. Somebody complained about. It was free. We never charged anyone for Smithy's Revenge. So yeah, that's where Welcome to Nowhere came about. Genuinely really proud of it. I do at some point want to come back to Smithy and Diller and give them their own books and stuff. Don't know when that'll be, because to be honest, in the last 18 months, everybody's plans, let's be fair, has gone completely out the window. I still, McGarry Stateside, books 1 to 3, there's now a box set out, by the way, of that. If you want to get them on Kindle, if you've not got into them yet, there's also them and one of the short stories, all as a box set. But the fourth book in that series should have really been out well before now. The reason it hasn't been is because I honestly do need to go to New York, Brooklyn in particular, to do some research, to do the idea I have for that book, to do it right, will involve being there. And as we all know, travel has been difficult. This is how difficult travel's been, ladies and gentlemen. When this pandemic started, myself and the wife were about to go on holidays to Mexico for a spectacular holiday we treated ourselves to. As I'm recording this, tomorrow we're going on holiday about an hour and a half away in Wales. That's the world we're now living in. And don't get me wrong, very excited to go to Wales. The best thing is you don't have to get different clothes, because they're basically having the same weather as Manchester, only an hour later. Anyway, what was I again rambling on about? Yeah, so McGarry Stateside, the next book in that will be coming at some point. I just generally wanted to do the research. It will take a while. I can update you exclusively here. I've not even said this in the email yet, but I was doing the follow-up to the final game, and there was a bit, to be honest, things got interrupted by life. I ended up going back to Ireland for parents having been well and stuff, so I was taking care of people. So things got very disrupted. So I started that book, then a lot of things happened that disrupted me. And I kind of lost the flow of it. Also, the idea was kind of the agency post-COVID, shall we say. I decided to acknowledge it, because was a big thing in authors, should you truly acknowledge it. I thought it'd be interesting to see them trying to get themselves back together after getting caught out, as so many businesses did. And to be honest, it was genuinely difficult to write, because we're not really over it yet, are we? It's one of those things where you kind of, I'm going to write it, and then when it comes out, it'll be over. You're like, probably a little too simplistic, that. That book will come out at some point, but I'm writing, I'm going to tell you this. Hopefully it'll come to fruition. I am writing the follow-up to Dead Man's Sins. Basically, that'll be the sixth book in the increasingly inaccurately titled Dublin Trilogy. Because, frankly, Dead Man's Sins, if you don't know, it happens just after Angels in the Moonlight. So that was a prequel that happens in 1999, that Angels in the Moonlight. And then Dead Man's Sins is early 2000. And the next book is going to be a couple of months after that one. Because there's a big long gap in time between Angels in the Moonlight and A Man in One of Those Faces. And it's been fun writing with Bunny. I always said I didn't want to stay in Dublin forever doing the Bunny books. It's why it's gone to America, because I really wanted to push myself. But interesting now, I've come back to Dublin, and it's kind of, they're different books in some ways. They're maybe a bit more traditional detectively in a way. But I've really enjoyed doing them. I think it's been a lot of fun. Dead Man's Sins was a book I really liked, and it got a great response from people. So thank you very much for that. The reviews and all have been lovely. So yeah, I think also it helps that, frankly, when you can't do research and stuff that much, although I am back in Dublin quite a bit, but generally when you can't do research and stuff like in America, I think writing the book in the Dublin I know so well, sounds like a song title, doesn't it? Made sense. So that's what I'm doing. So yeah, I think that's going to be the next release. Don't know when that'll be. We're at the very early stages of that book, I should emphasise. As the next Stranger Time book might well be out before, which is in February of next year. But yes, before that, Welcome to Nowhere is now available on audio everywhere. That means Authors Direct, Kobo, iTunes, all those things, as well as, of course, Audible. And I thought, to give you a taster here, this is the prologue I wrote, basically because the book, the short story referred to an incident that happened with Smithy. It was kind of the thing that sparked off the whole thing. And I started then trying to write the book, and it wasn't really working. And I realised the reason was is you have to show the main incident. Yep, the inciting incident. Sounds obvious, doesn't it? But the inciting incidents for the entire book, you have to show people the inciting incident. So I went back, wrote the inciting incident, and then the whole thing sort of took off from there. And as I said, it's a book I'm really very proud of. I really enjoyed it. It was just a fun ride. And I think you'll enjoy it too. If you fancy something a little bit different, as I said, it isn't the standard fare. But to be fair, none of my books really are. Let's be honest. I barely at this point fit into the crime genre at all, even though they are crime books. Increasingly we're feeling like, yeah, we're just not going to bother telling people the genres. They just got to read it and hopefully they enjoy it. And I hope you enjoy this, of course, always read by the brilliant Morgan C. Jones, who has been such a great friend to us throughout those years. He's got done how many books? 9 now, with a 10th one coming. So this is the prologue to Welcome to Nowhere, which is read by the brilliant Morgan C. Jones. And I will speak to you, I'm not going to promise anymore, but I think the next episode of this will probably be considerably sooner than this one was. So who knows what phrases we'll be using then. Anyway, I haven't even written a script for this. I've just done a stream of consciousness. So I hope the ums and ahs were not too annoying. And I'll give you a professional now, ladies and gentlemen, who plans ahead and, you know, reads things out that have already been written, which makes him sound a lot cooler than me. Take it away, Morgan C. Jones.
Prologue. Rock bottom. Those two words had been bouncing around Smithy's head all day. This had to be rock bottom. It could take many forms for many people. He'd once known an alcoholic who had woken up naked in a kiddie's ball pit. That had been the moment that had pushed him to finally get help, and the one that had cost him his job as a school vice principal. The comedian Richard Pryor famously set himself on fire while freebasing cocaine and missed the once-in-a-lifetime chance to work with the Muppets. So rock bottom was different for everybody. Smithy wasn't naked, high or on fire. He was in full possession of his faculties, hiding in some bushes, and dressed as a leprechaun. He was also, he now realized with absolute clarity, a gambling addict. It wasn't as if he hadn't known that before, but there was knowing, and there was knowing. Lying face down in the mud to avoid getting shot offered an excellent opportunity for a personal audit. The results were not pretty. 3 weeks ago, Jimmy Trike, who described himself as a casting agent, but was really so much less, had approached him about a job. $5,000. For an acting gig, that was a lot. For one day's work, that was an awful lot. For an actor who'd not had a paid acting job for 2 years, 4 months, and 12 days, that was one hell of an awful lot. On top of that, Jimmy mentioned it was $5,000 guaranteed, with a chance of it increasing to 50. Smithy had been around far too long not to smell a massive rat. It hadn't been an acting role at all. It turned out Jimmy Trike was who you went to if you were organising a leprechaun hunt and you needed prey. He hadn't phrased it quite like that, but Smithy had figured it out. Being a dwarf actor, he'd been offered a lot of leprechaun work in the past and had always turned it down, regardless of how much he needed the money, because it played into the bullshit narrative that the only parts people like him could play were inextricably linked to their height. As if the gamut of human emotion could only be run by somebody over 6 feet tall. You want someone who can embody the human experience? How about someone who has to put up with a world designed for people 2 feet taller than them? And who has to suffer the indignity of people treating them like a novelty item? Smithy had turned down the job, but only after getting into it with Jimmy. Shame on him for making people into some kind of humiliating sideshow for the gratification of Wall Street jerk-offs with the emotional maturity of prepubescent boys. He had been forthright, incisive, and eloquent. He'd also managed to keep his temper in check. Smithy had a bit of an anger management issue. At least, that was what the judge had called it. Smithy's girlfriend, Cheryl, had looked visibly relieved to hear that while he had given the scumbag a large piece of his mind, he hadn't garnished it with any physical violence. He had neglected to mention that he may have had a run-in with Jimmy's dumbass Jeep in the parking lot afterwards. Who needs a Jeep in Manhattan, for Christ's sake? The whole thing had felt righteous. Then, a couple of weeks later, Smithy had felt way too confident about a full house of kings over sevens, and he'd found himself in $5,000 to Benny Wong. Worse, he hadn't cleared a line of credit beforehand, assuring everyone he was good for it as he'd bet the pot. Benny didn't take kindly to such behaviour. You didn't run illegal card games in Chinatown for as long as he had, without having some very strict rules, and without having people working for him who could see to it that those rules were respected, on pain of pain. $5,000 bought a lot of pain, or possibly the end of all pain. There had been rumours. Benny Wong knew a lot of people, and some of those people had occasionally ceased being people. Smithy had managed to negotiate a 24-hour grace period, and he'd been lucky to get that. Benny already considered him a pain in the ass. He'd banned Smithy from his games for 3 months after he had got into a fight with another patron who had refused to stop rubbing his head for luck. The world was full of assholes. Still, flat broke and down $5,000 to Benny Wong, Smithy couldn't exactly throw many stones. He'd got the extension only because the next day was St. Patrick's Day. He'd explained about the hunt, and how he'd be paid $5,000 for just turning up. The one part he'd neglected to mention had been the tiny detail that he wasn't in it. He was banking on Jimmy Trike being a forgiving sort. After the last time, Cheryl had been clear. If Smithy got himself into another hole with gambling, they would be done. She had been right to say it. He was painfully aware she was out of his league, and frankly, if he couldn't keep his shit together, then she deserved a whole lot better. She was not a woman to hang around waiting for a deadbeat to wise up, and Smithy didn't blame her. And so, he had swallowed his pride and gone to see Jimmy Trike again. It had gone as badly as he had feared it would. The human dumpster fire had lorded it over him, revelling in his discomfort, and repeating back to him, word for word, and in between gales of laughter, a lot of what Smithy had said at their previous meeting. Then, after he'd had his fun, Jimmy dropped the bomb that all 10 positions for prey had been filled. The following morning, Smithy had been sitting in a diner up by Grand Central, deciding what message he should leave on Cheryl's voicemail as he hightailed it out of town, when the call had come in. Jimmy, sounding a lot more friendly, informed him that a space had opened up. One of his contestants had got himself arrested overnight for public nudity. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Smithy had flirted with the idea of telling him to shove it, but that would have been just another example of the dumb pride that had got him into this situation in the first place. Beggars could not be choosers. He'd been picked up by a stretch limo out near the Brooklyn Bridge. There had been 10 of them, and he'd been the last to hitch a ride. Some of the others he'd recognized from having seen them at auditions, some not. It wasn't as if the thing actually required actors. Actors were just the easiest people to find and, statistically speaking, the most likely to be desperate for money. There had been no small talk, whether that was because nobody wanted to bond with their fellow competitors, or because they were all simply too ashamed of being involved in this fiasco, It was impossible to say. They'd been driven out to a country estate. Smithy didn't know where. His knowledge of New York stretched only as far as to the end of the subway line. At the venue, they had been met by people from the events company, suited and booted, all professional efficiency, as if this were a regular conference, and not some Wolf of Wall Street fever dream. Once they'd signed all the waivers and non-disclosure agreements, and there'd been a lot, because assholes don't like people knowing they're assholes, they had been issued with their uniform, complete with tall leprechaun hat. Every fibre of Smithy's being vibrated with righteous fury. He was all set to tell these people where they could shove it, including the hat. But then he thought of Cheryl, and how much he enjoyed his working kneecaps, and kept his mouth shut. He and the other actors got changed in a stable. A horse huffed as it watched Smithy stuff his clothes into a kit bag. A couple of shaven-headed heavies in sports coats stood by the doors, before a blonde woman in impractical heels asked them to assemble. The briefing was short and to the point. She referred to them as participants, clearly too embarrassed to refer to them as leprechauns. Poor woman. Smithy really wanted to stick her in one of these outfits and see how she'd feel then. Each participant would be given a 15-minute head start before the hunters followed. The hunters would be wielding paintball guns. Once shot, the participants were out and had to return to the house, where they would receive their pay, in cash, as agreed. There were four hunters, each with their own coloured paintballs, and the one who shot the most leprechauns would win. The blonde woman had mentioned this in the mistaken belief that the prey gave a damn about the other end of things. All they cared about was what she explained next. The last leprechaun standing got the 50 grand. Smithy hated everything about this. But if he was going to feel caked in self-loathing for weeks, he might as well do it with money in the bank. 50 grand would clear his debts, with enough left over to live off while he got to work on his play. All he needed was a little time to get it done. His group had been brought out to the start line. 10 condemned men. Only at that point had it dawned on Smithy that they were all men. Did these idiots really think that there was no such thing as a female leprechaun? He had no idea why this bothered him, but it did. The four hunters had been there, waiting for them. Each one sat astride a quad bike, wearing what looked like the traditional get-up English people wore to hunt foxes. Smithy had only ever seen it on TV. They'd had their coloured flags on their bikes, and large paintball guns resting on their shoulders. One of the hunters had been an immensely fat guy, Jabba the Hutt-esque in stature, while the other three guys looked, if anything, bored by proceedings, as if this was their fifth leprechaun hunt of the season, and they'd grown tired of them by the third. The grounds were spectacular. The tree line was maybe 100 yards away. It might have been the most obvious place to head for, but Smithy was still going for it. If one of those asshats was going to claim his scalp, they'd at least have to get off their damned bike to get it. It seemed the big guy was in charge, judging by how the blonde woman waited for his nod to get things started. The participants had all made a run for it as soon as the horn had sounded. Seeing how bad the others were at hiding, Smithy could only assume that many of them had enjoyed considerably happier childhoods than he had. During the briefing, the corporate blonde had mentioned some little surprises. It turned out she had been referring to the fact that the woods were booby-trapped. He'd watched as a fellow contestant in front of him had plummeted, screaming into a covered pit. Smithy looked down to see a mattress at the bottom, his competitor on it, unharmed, save for his bruised pride, and possibly ass. At that point, Smithy had heard the roar of engines behind him and ran. He watched from a distance as one of the hunters pulled up beside the pit and fired their paintball gun into it. Talk about fish in a barrel. Judging by a couple of screams he'd heard from afar, these little surprises seemed to be dotted all over the place. Smithy had quickly decided that the best course of action would be to hunker down and wait it out. It was either that or risk getting hogtied in some trap while running for his life. He chose his hiding place carefully. A hollow in the ground, shielded by bushes on three sides. It allowed him to keep out of view unless someone drove right by him. These idiots would be looking for moving targets. Patience would be the key. Smithy wasn't wearing a watch, so he didn't know how long he'd been out there, but it had been a while. He'd heard whooping and hollering as the hunt progressed, and one by one the prey had fallen. The activity had settled down to quad bikes driving back and forth, up and down the paths. The dumbasses were that loud. They didn't exactly have the element of surprise. Smithy toyed with the idea of taking out one of the hunters, but while it hadn't been spelled out expressly, he guessed that the hunted becoming the hunter would be considered strictly against the rules. Nobody involved in this affair was interested in a fair fight. Lying on the wet ground was starting to make his old knee injury ache. It had been sore for maybe 20 minutes now. He raised his head, checked nobody could see him, then risked standing up to try to stretch it out. Through the trees, he could see the forlorn figure of one of the other leprechauns trudging back towards the stable. By Smithy's reckoning, that must be nearly all of them. He wasn't an optimist by nature, but holy shit, 50 grand. He dived for cover as rope twanged behind him. Someone let out a plaintive yelp. Smithy turned to see another contestant. A red-haired guy he'd vaguely recognised in the limo, possibly from a couple of auditions. It was hard to tell if it was definitely him. He hadn't been dangling upside down from a tree the last time Smithy had seen him.
Jesus, dude! Help me! Please!
He must have been sneaking around and not noticed the trap. His left leg was caught in a rope snare. Hence the reason he was hanging 6 feet up in the air. Smithy looked up at him. Technically, the man was his competition.
Come on, guy. Don't leave me hanging.
50 grand.
Seriously? We're in this together. Us against them.
Smithy looked at the rope. The other end of it was attached to a stake in the ground. He could probably untie it.
Come on. You aren't going to leave a brother like this, are you?
He couldn't. He just couldn't. It was bad enough that he'd lowered himself to participate in this debacle. He couldn't abandon all humanity and leave the guy hanging there, just to improve his chances at some cash. He looked around. It didn't seem that any of the hunters had been close enough to hear. He sighed.
Hang on.
The rope wasn't the easiest to untie, and the landing wasn't graceful, but he managed to get the guy down. After the redhead picked himself up, he extended his hand and gave a broad smile.
Duncan.
Smithy shook it.
Smithy, pleased to make your acquaintance.
Hey, thanks, man.
Smithy waved him away.
Like you said, we're all in this together. Us against those juvenile idiots.
Duncan picked up his hat and dusted it off.
I know, right? This is insane.
Smithy nodded.
Yeah, degrading bullshit. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't desperate for the money.
Me either, said Duncan. My Monica needs an operation bad.
Oh, jeez, said Smithy, feeling awkward. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I promised her she could get her boobs done. She's got the pair she wants picked out and everything. Got to keep the ladies happy, am I right?
Smithy said nothing. He looked at the guy and waited for some indication he was joking. None came.
Okay, he said eventually.
He was in no position to judge, but he did so anyway.
So what's your tactic?
Asked Duncan.
Hiding? Yeah, cool. I've been relying on running. I'm pretty fast.
Good for you, said Smithy. Speaking of which, I should probably get back to, you know.
Oh, yeah, said Duncan. Totally. Thanks again. I'm going to...
They both hunched reflexively, as Duncan was interrupted by the blonde woman's voice. She was standing on the edge of the woods, shouting into a megaphone.
Contestants, there are only two of you remaining.
Smithy and Duncan looked at each other.
Holy shit, said Duncan.
Smithy extended his hand.
Whatever happens. Best of luck.
Yeah, you too,
said Duncan, accepting the handshake.
$60,000 is a lot of money.
Smithy nodded.
Sure is. It's 50, though, not 60.
Sure,
said Duncan, stepping back.
Sorry.
Something was suddenly off.
You'd be amazed how much augmentation costs these days, he continued. Got to get it done right. One of the guys promised me $10,000 extra if he won.
What?
Said Smithy.
How can you...
Before he could finish, Duncan pulled a small paintball gun from his pocket and shot Smithy in the chest. Smithy had to admit Duncan hadn't been exaggerating. If the next 15 minutes proved anything, it was that the guy really was good at running.
Thanks for listening to The Bunnycast. If you'd like to hear more, then please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, as that way we know you want them to continue. The audiobooks of all the Dublin Trilogy are available from Audible, iTunes, and anywhere else audiobooks are sold. This podcast is written and presented by me, Cuaoimh McDonald, with the stories being read by Morgan C. Jones. The audiobook production is by Sound Entertaining Limited. Podcast production is by Richard Massera, with the artwork done by Wonderwife. Copyright everything bar the music, McFory Inc. 2018. And speaking of the music, the killer track you're hearing right now is from Honour Among Thieves, a new band that is a merger of the Bible Code Sundays and Brand New Zeros. Do check them out. Try to satisfy